Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Tonight, we got a really good show for you guys lined up. I think you're really going to enjoy it. And I'm going to throw it over to Karen. Karen, tell our lucky listeners what they have won.
Well, Rick, excuse me, what they have won is Jeff, who is the assistant director and lead investigator for Nightwalkers Paranormal Society. But even more exciting than the whole Nightwalkers Paranormal thing, as far as I'm concerned, is that he has a successful, and I have to say this word carefully, horror props business.
Yeah, you got to watch out on something.
I know, really. And then he also is on the cutting edge of developing new paranormal equipment. So we have so many things we can talk to him other than just ghost hunting, and I'm really, really excited about that.
Yeah.
So before we get started, I have to give a shout out to my good buddy, William Becker, because it's his birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday, William.
Happy birthday, William.
That's right. Of course, he's not here listening, but you know.
Yeah. So what else is new, Karen?
You know, I relearned a valuable lesson this week.
Okay.
And that is, what I was telling you about before the show, is that when somebody asks for my opinion on their evidence, they don't actually want my opinion. They want my validation of what they think their evidence is.
They want the ear candy. So what exactly happened then? I mean, you already told us what happened. So what happened with that?
Well, I feel really badly. Somebody sent an EVP and said, what do you think? And I did my usual extremely analytical version of listening to the EVP and sent her my analytical version, which was unfortunately not the same as what she'd gotten. Although I was very clear. I said, I think that this is a child's voice, most likely an EVP, but here's what I think it says. And here's how I arrived at that conclusion. And she wasn't very happy with me. So I just need to remember. I just need to remember that other people aren't nearly as analytical as I am, and that's okay.
Well, see, you know, like I was saying also before the show, that all we really have to rely upon as investigators and researchers, you know, of the strange and unusual, all we really have to rely upon is our credibility and our integrity. Mm-hmm. If we put something out there and say, this is what this says, and somebody really, and believe me, people will pick things apart and listen to them, you know, especially people like the Not-So-Amazing
Randy. Yeah, apparently I'm that person.
Well, no, I mean, but you're doing it in the sense that you're trying to prove that there is something there rather than, you know, be a debunker of it. But yeah, you got to be really careful because you don't want to put something out there that's going to make you look like an idiot because, you know, for 130 years, parapsychology and psychical research and investigation is trying to earn the legitimacy that it deserves in the scientific community. So, you know, just be very careful before you put anything out on your websites. It's just really take a good, hard, close look at it because you don't want to make the rest of us and yourself look like a chucklehead.
Well, and along those same lines is then the accuracy in reporting as well. I run across this a lot of times among some of the very young groups that are really super enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. And so they report, like, if it's something that I've been involved in where I know exactly what happened. They sometimes, in their enthusiasm, take liberties with the reporting of what happened as opposed to a very accurate way of reporting.
Right.
Does that make sense? And that concerns me because I think that if you're in the field and you want to be spreading credibility and seen as a credible and honest researcher, then everything you say and do has to be extremely honest, and every little piece of evidence that you hand out has to be really, really very well researched. Yeah. And so, like I was telling you, I very exhaustively, when I get something that I think is evidence, I don't let it sit there. I don't think, oh, that was really cool, and then put it out there. I go over it and over it and over it, and I chop it up into bits. And if it's a piece of video, I'll advance it frame by frame. Mm-hmm. And if it's a piece of audio, I'll break it down into syllables so that I can try and listen and make sure I'm hearing what I think I'm hearing. And if I hadn't done that, I will admit that some of the things that got me really excited the very first time I saw them, I would have put out as evidence, and it later turned out that they weren't. Like, I have this video from the Klondike, which we talked about last week with Katrina from Paranormal State, because they were there as well.
Which was a good show last week.
Yeah, I had this just this really convincing piece of video. And I went through it frame by frame by frame, because when I saw it, I had kind of that, oh, you know, whoa moment. Yeah. And I started, and I probably watched it 40 or 50 times, frame by frame by frame. And what I was able to finally figure out is that it was a reflection in a mirror. And so you would see Rob St. Helens walk by in this video. And then a minute or two later, you would see what looked like a specter. Well, all it was Rob's reflection in the mirror, because the mirror wasn't directly in line with where he would walk by.
Right.
I mean, but if I had put that out there,
then you would have made yourself look like a chucklehead, like I had said.
I would have made myself look like a chucklehead. So I'm really exhaustively careful with my, you know, with my evidence.
Well, you have to be. I mean, according, you know, like, to mainstream science, we are nothing but a bunch of shaven monkey automatons. We have no soul. We have nothing like that. At least. That's from what I understand. You know, we drop from the trees and that's it. So when you put something out there that it's like, you know, this is evidence, this is a spirit, believe it or not, they really do look very hard at this stuff. And when you say that somebody's home or business is haunted, you really can change their world. I mean, you go into a household that's, you know, they're hardcore conservative, born-again Christians, and they think they have a demon in their house because that's what their pastor told them and that's what all their friends told them. But you go in and it's like, no, I have evidence here that shows it's Aunt Mabel. Well, Aunt Mabel's supposed to be in heaven. Don't know what to tell you. She's still here. So you really can really put a person's core beliefs and ideas into shock. And I've seen it before.
Right. Well, what that does is that creates cognitive dissonance. And usually then what happens is they come up with a way to explain that to themselves that fits within their frame of reference. However, in the meantime, it is difficult for them. You very seldom see someone with strong, strong beliefs who like especially strong anti-ghost beliefs. Mm-hmm. I think that I could have the not so amazing Randy sitting here next to me and an apparition could appear before him and say, "Why, hello, not so amazing Randy." And then disappear, leaving a cloud of ectoplasm behind. And he would make that fit within his belief system.
Well, it's like I always say, one of these days, the you know, a UFO is going to land on the White House lawn and the ghost of Bigfoot is going to come out and say, "Hey, everybody, what's going on? You got a beer." And there will still be people who look at it and say, where's the zipper?
That's right.
So, yeah,
you're absolutely right.
We've just become so jaded in today, but you know what? Like I also say this, that skepticism is necessary. Let's face it; it keeps everybody keeps people honest. Mm-hmm. Without skepticism, I mean, you can't completely just turn your brain off and believe everything that you see. But also, at the same token, you can't be so skeptical that like nothing, absolutely nothing, exists.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, and you know, but like even with while my personal belief is that what we're dealing with is most likely ghosts, I'm very careful when I speak at conferences, when I talk to people, to say that's my personal belief. I don't know that EVPs and video and pictures and all of that and all of the experiences, I don't know for a fact that those are ghosts. That's my personal belief. There's nothing that exists between what I believe and that leap. To get, you know, that those things are caused by ghosts. So I'm even really careful with that. But again, I'm pretty precise in what I say and do on purpose. So,
you know, you got to be, you know, you have to be. But I got a little bit of a funny story before we go to break. Yesterday at work, it's been about 3 months, actually, I finally got my review. And that back pay is going to look beautiful on my next check. But
oh, very nice. Not you're fired, huh?
No. Apparently, they really love me. But I've been there 11 years, so, you know, of course I've earned people's respect. But so I'm sitting down with my boss, and he's a really cool guy. And he's giving me the view, and he's like, you know, there's one, we have to put at least one thing in there that's like not so much a negative, but like a criticism. I'm like, yeah,
so that you can work on it. Yeah.
Exactly. I've been working long enough to understand that there's like the management sandwich. They tell you one good thing, yep, and then one bad thing, and then they end it off with another good thing.
Yep.
So everything was like meeting expectations or above, you know, everything was excellent. Rick is doing a great job. And then my boss, he's got this big smile on his face. He's like, there's one thing though. I'm like, oh, okay, what's that? And he's like, well, about 8 or 9 months ago, you were reading the kids' ghost stories and you were presenting these ghost stories as if they were real. And I'm like, we both just started dying laughing. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. My boss thought it was hilarious too. But he's like, we got to put that in there. Otherwise, you're going to come off looking like an android or a Vulcan or something, that you're just like perfect in every way. And that's, you know, that's completely understandable. But it's like the book that I was reading from the kids was like true ghost stories. We're talking like, you know, the Monks of the Tulip Staircase and the Seaford Poltergeist and, you know, Nandor Fodor and, you know, some Hans Holzer, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, to me, I've looked at these, read these things, and they've been presented as being well-documented cases, but apparently in the psychiatric and psychological world, you're still considered a nut job if you believe this stuff. So that's the moral of the story.
Well, we are nut jobs. Mm-hmm. That's, we actually have on our team, we have a guy that's, he's a professor of psychology, but he's, you know, he's got a psychological background. So it's interesting. He's even had us speak in his class about, you know, belief in the paranormal and that type of thing, which is really kind of fascinating. So, you know, there's some people that are, you know, at least walking the line.
Oh, that was another thing that he did. He did say it's because it was scaring them. I'm like, really? It didn't seem like it was scaring them at all. They seem to be enjoying it. Because everybody at work, they know what I do on the side. And, you know, they think it's pretty cool. And, but, you know, hey, if that was the worst thing that I am guilty of at work, then I have to say that I'm way ahead of the game. So this is what we're going to do. With that being said, I think we're going to throw it over to Cheryl. We're going to pay some bills. And when we come back, we're going to have Jeff from Nightwalkers Paranormal. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Come on back.
If you are a small business owner, you're paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, glad to see that everybody is back. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio, ztalkradio.com. Tonight, as I told you guys, we have a really good show for you. Tonight we have Jeff Durrett of Nightwalkers Paranormal. Jeff has got, you know, not so much his hands in a lot of the paranormal field. He also has this little business of his called The Devil's Door, where he makes horror movie props, and he also creates
apps. Say that right,
apps.
Horror. You want to make
horror.
Sure that... That's right. So, you want to get that extra O-R on the end, where it's a horror. Whole different, it's a whole different genre then.
Yeah, because here in the Midwest, we just say horror, and it's like, yeah, it doesn't come off sound good, so good. So, Jeff Durrett, welcome to the underground.
Glad to be here.
Good. So, you know, last time we had your group on Nightwalkers, we talked to Colleen, Brian, and Mike Markowitz. So, yep. Where were you? No, I'm joking.
actually, I was dropping my stepdaughter off at college. So I was,
okay.
Oh, I suppose yeah. That's okay then.
Is that a good one? All right.
I guess that's all right.
That'll work. Remember to call in sick next time. So, Nightwalkers. So, Nightwalkers Paranormal. You are the co-director. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, I always like to ask this of people, and I know Karen likes to know this as well, because we get a lot of people who just sort of enter into this field just for, you know, shits and giggles. What is it that, you know, sparked your interest in the paranormal?
I sparked my interest a long, long time ago, even when I was, I'm going to say, probably 10, 11 years old. I grew up in Fall River, Massachusetts, and the big thing was the Lizzie Borden thing.
Right.
And it was around the holidays that Halloween came, and I read an article in an insert in the magazine about this this couple doing a recording in a graveyard, and it sparked my interest as a kid, and I was always into horror and everything, so it kind of threw me to get into this, and I read the article. They said they had these voices. Well, I then I went there, I said, you know, kind of a couple of my friends as kids, we rode the bicycles off to the graveside of Lizzie Borden, and we, you know, sat there for hours, well,
sure,
with a, you know, recorder playing, and that's how I got into it. And it's just started going from there. So it was.
So did you get anything? Did you get anything from Lizzie?
Not the first time. We went there like three times, and the third time we did get some voices of a woman singing, which was just mind bending. And at the time we were real young, so we were just scared as all hell to even hold the tape at the time. It was pretty funny, but that's what kicked it off, though.
I have to ask you, because you are a horror fan, do you have an all time favorite horror movie or?
I like anything like John Carpenter, the classics, but I also like the old classics of Hammer House. I love Hammer House, the old classic Hammer House. I'm not a big fan of the remakes. You know, I still stick to the originals. They're probably the best. So I'm pretty much old school horror.
I would have to agree with you on that. You see, now he said it right. Horror. There we go.
Horror. That's right. When I was a teenager, we would sit at, or even like when I was in grade school, we would have slumber parties and we would stay up, and on Friday nights they would have the horror movies on until, starting at midnight on until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And we would sit up and watch those, scare the crap out of ourselves. The scariest horror movies still, and maybe it's because I saw it when I was like 10, was the old Vincent Price, Pit and the Pendulum. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
I mean, on the Saturdays, I think I blame all this to my mother, because she was into horror, and used to, when I was growing up, I grew up on Creature Double Feature, so I think that's the whole problem with my mom. She turned me on to this as a young child.
That seems kind of strange, your mom. Hey, honey, come over here and watch his blood, guts, and gore. Yay!
I don't know. Exactly. I don't know. Twisted, I guess.
So, you know, with Nightwalkers Paranormal, sure, you started that with Colleen, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How did you guys, come about that? How did you guys meet and, start Nightwalkers?
I came in later on. She founded it, and then we started working together on some projects from some group meetings and stuff with other individuals and, you know, conventions and gatherings and meets and stuff. And we got to talking. It wasn't that far away, and it just kind of hit off. She's a great person to lead the whole team, and I couldn't ask for a better person. She's really great at it. She has a lot of passion involved in it.
Yeah.
And the whole teams are great. I mean, our whole team here is great. So that's how we originally started meeting and became really close friends, and with even our families too. So it's worked out very well.
Wow, that's fantastic. So, you know, what are you guys currently working on right now? You have any big projects that you're doing at the moment?
No, because the holiday season really puts a damper on everything. A lot of members, they have a lot of plans, so it's kind of tough right now to get anything lock solid into it. This type of year is just full on anybody.
Yep, and this is the time of year where you start to wish you could go out and get your ghost on, too, because you sort of get used to it, and then to have a period where you don't do it is like, well.
You know, I'm just waiting.
It's like a drug, you get addicted.
What's that?
I said it's like a drug. You get addicted if you don't have it. You know, you go out and find a place to investigate, or even just to get together and exchange notes or go over some EVPs or something like that. So it's a great thing. You know?
Yep. Well, you know, I did get a call the other day from this old guy, and he was talking about that. He was terrified, you know, that for whatever reason, somebody told him that he was going to be visited by three ghosts this Saturday. And he wants an investigation done because, holy cow, he is getting ready to just die of a heart attack from fear. So,
I've got to tell you, actually, I thought that the only holiday ghost thing was Christmas Carol. And it turns out that ghosts and the holidays are really, really intertwined. We did this ghost walk with William on Saturday night, and he talks about some of the ghost stories associated with the holidays. And I was listening to, one of the holiday songs, and it was like, oh, it's the happiest time of the year. And one of the lines is something about ghost stories. So I thought that was really interesting. Sorry, total aside. Okay, go on. I apologize. Oh, so somebody in the chat room actually has a question for you. He wants to know what movies you've done. You do props, right? Horror movie props, is that right?
Well, it's not for actually horror movies. My props are made for industrial haunts. It's not so much, I mean, they can use them, but I gear towards professional industrial haunts for my props. So anyone that has a professional haunt, they'll go through a call up, and we'll reproduce something for them. If they have a theme, we'll go with a theme. It depends on what the client wants. Pretty much that's how it rolls. We don't really do a lot of business with any kind of movies whatsoever, but it's all for the professional haunt industry. So
So like haunted houses, so you know the neighborhood haunted house, that you go to that and the stuff that we see in there. That's pretty much your stuff then.
Correct. Yeah, it would have to be a professional because it's not for the props ain't built for the local guy that you know does his yard up. These are
right.
Elaborate. Yeah.
So how does so when you create these things, does that somehow translate into your paranormal investigation? Because it seems like there's sort of some kind of a reverse link there or something. Do you rely on one for the other?
In some cases I do, because I use a lot of designs we make kind of coincide with both realms. It depends, because I can use, depends on what the theme they're asking for, but a lot of times I use both aspects of each category, and I can, you know, kind of pull from one and grab from the other and, you know, come up with a different design. So it does overlap. Either way will overlap, you know, depending on what the customer wants. So what I decide I want to build for the, you know, 2012 prop and what kind of theme I want to come out, what I think the flavor is coming out. So, but it does enhance my ability to, you know, imagine what I want to make. So,
yeah.
Right.
Well, the thing with real hauntings that I found is that they're very, very subtle. And so I would imagine that anything you experience that you then think, hey, I could turn this into a prop or whatever, that it's more exaggerated than what it would be in real life. Would you agree?
Yes, the majority of scare tactics they use in a prop design, and it depends on the individual, or professional individual they want to do as a scene or as a whole complete theme. Mm-hmm. They might shoot for a lot of actors, a lot of screen, a lot of sound, and sometimes it's a subtle things where it might be a quiet area where we're going to design for, and then you get the big bang at the back where everything's quiet, there's something going on, there's something going to happen, you just don't know when it is, and it's the quick shock treatment. So it depends on who's ordering for what and what the theme is going to be, but sometimes it's nice to have the loud stuff where it throws people up, but I also like the subtle things that happen that just keep you off your feet, and then the final bang where it just sends you running. So that's the kind of things I like more than a lot of screaming and hollering, a loud noise and things jumping out, because then you get immune to the shock again, so I like to keep it off your feet.
The thing that I love, about, with that and, what you do with the paranormal, you watch a lot of these television shows and they're like, hey, we just disproved this because we were able to recreate what this ghost allegedly did, and everybody's, giving each other high fives and backward caps flying all over the place. It's like, no, you kind of just recreated what somebody else did. It's kind of like putting, Fiddler on the Roof on, every 6 months. But, can you bring that into play with the devil, with what you do with the Devil's Door and what you do with the paranormal, that you can recreate things?
Oh, most definitely. There's mm-hmm. a lot of things you see on TV that's easily I can recreate, and you wouldn't even know it, because it's things that can be recreated also can be affected on when they're videotaping. So it's true. I mean, they're great shows. Like I said, they're all great shows, and I'm not gonna point out anybody, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that you'll see in these fields that I look at it and go, I could create that. I can do this, special effects without spending money on it. So,
well, that makes me wonder, though, is if when you watch some of these shows, do you, because of what you do, do you question their authenticity because you could recreate that?
I look at it and say, I could probably do that. But I don't question what they're doing, because I'm not actually in the location they're at. I'm not experiencing what they're feeling, what they're seeing, there's a lot of dead time in these shows. They all piece together to get the best performance for these shows. Yeah. But in turn, I take it for what it's worth, because it is a show. And it's there to, have audience people watch them. So, some of them, it is what it is. And, I'm not going to credit it or discredit it, because, I like watching the shows, and I don't watch them to rip it apart and say, I can do that. Mm-hmm. I watch them because they're interesting, and I enjoy watching paranormal shows.
Sure. So you also do the thing with working on apps. Now, mm-hmm. First off, allow me to just ask this, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Now, and trust me when I say this, we know our own. Would you kind of classify yourself as being a nerd?
Oh, most definitely.
Outstanding. Good answer,
most
sir.
Most definitely.
Well, welcome to
and
the
I'm
club.
Proud of it, too.
That's right.
Outstanding. Good deal. Hey, like we said, we know our own. But with the apps, now, I know that there's an app that you can get on your iPhone or your Android or whatever that can put the picture of a ghost in, any setting that you put it in. I could put a ghost in the middle of the local ice cream shop or whatever.
Sure.
What exactly are the apps that you create? They are paranormal. You can use them, correct?
Correct. I have several paranormal. I have, I think, three of them out on the market now, basically on paranormal. I have one that does a lot of hauntings from the Freetown Forest. I mapped out the whole Freetown State Forest as a guide, because there's a lot of people that know of the Bridgewater Triangle up here in New England. They know the Freetown Forest has a lot of activity, so I decided to... Because it is such a huge, it's pretty fascinating history behind it. So what I wanted to do is give an app out to everyone, if you want to purchase an app, that you can actually track it with your smartphone and GPS, and you can get to every single place that's has paranormal activity or has a background history involved in satanic cults or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So I built that app for anybody that, wants to venture out into the woods and, doesn't want to, have a, just chances to get to these places, because it is such a scary place. It's huge. I forgot 2,000 acres or something like that. But it's a huge place, and but it is a great place to check out and see, because it's really, really, I've done a lot of investigations in the Freetown State Forest, and I've always walked away pretty happy on, you know, day that I really captured from it. That was one of them, and then I did another one for using a smartphone for investigations, too, which it had a notebook in this designated specifically for the paranormal. It could categorize things, it could take a picture, and then say you're out in the woods and you find something or something happens to you, then you can capture a geocode location so you can always go back to that location using the geocode mapping device within the phone. So it has like three or four really pops of one app. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So you're talking about practical apps, because some of those paranormal apps, not so practical.
Yeah.
The Ghost Radar is my favorite on the iPhone.
I love the Ghost
Radar. Yeah,
a friend of mine has that on his.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting one, yeah.
So
I think I got three apps and some other stuff, too. And I've done a lot of developing for groups, for paranormal groups, businesses, and those they don't see those on the market. Usually there's a couple on the market for groups and stuff like Collins, too, our group, too. And I believe there's another one for, and we had another one for another radio show company. But there's a lot of groups that we deal with that like a personal app, and I'll develop it for a genre of people within the group, so they can either communicate, share notes, share files, but it's designated for the particular group. So
that's a good idea. Yeah. So I want to talk about the Bridgewater Triangle.
Oh, that is so weird, Karen. You're like what, 1,500 miles away from me? Would you read my mind or something? Because that is one of the places that fascinates the hell out of me. So yeah, I definitely want to talk about that with you, Jeff.
So talk about, because some people probably don't even know what the Bridgewater Triangle is. So why don't you tell us about Bridgewater Triangle?
Well, the Bridgewater Triangle is a triangle in New England. And I believe the tip of it goes into Bridgewater. It concaves down to the Westport area, and it goes across to Rehoboth. It's a complete triangle. And in this triangle bed, in this triangle, there's been numerous cases of a lot of paranormal activity. The land in this area, based on the Plymouth area, the Wampanoags and the Pilgrims, there was a massive war here, the King Philip's War, which hundreds of thousands of people were murdered and slaughtered children. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of history involved in the land within the Pilgrims, the Indians. So a lot of death, a lot of tortures, a lot of background information. Getting into it further, in the Freetown State Forest, there was a lot of cult murders in the 60s and 70s, gangland shootings. It's just numerous. They've had UFO sightings. It means it goes on and on and on.
Now,
so there's a lot of activity here.
I've heard a lot about Freetown, actually.
Now, was that the area that when Christopher Balzano wrote his book?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I thought. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
So, you know, with what is it, Freetown, you said?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Freetown.
Freetown, Fall River.
Right. Now, you always get people who are like, well, you know, it's built on an Indian burial ground, or, you know, somebody sacrificing kittens in the name of Satan. Is any of this, you know, historically documented?
The satanic rituals were documented, and there's a former police officer from Assonet, which covers part of Freetown and Assonet area, and he did a lot of work on the cult murders up there, and it was actually cult murders involved in it. So they did satanic rituals. They have actually. I went over. I did an interview with him because I wanted to get some of his past history. He had photographs and papers out of the local Herald News that was the print in the era. So there's a lot of information documented through satanic rituals and cults and murder, drugs. It was just a hotbed of, you know, back in the 70s. It was a dumping ground, and that's what it was, because you had Boston to the north that had a lot of mafia and gangs and drugs. Mm-hmm. Then you had Providence, and Freetown State Forest has, you know, 2,000-plus acres, and this is where they do with it, you know, do the bad things to people, and they got rid of them there. So.
Well, let's talk about the Bridgewater specifically. The things that I have read about the Bridgewater Triangle, that there are a lot of people that just sort of go for a walk and never quite come back.
Yeah, well, they have the Bridgewater Triangle has the red-headed hitchhiker on Route 44. Mm-hmm. They've I mean, they've got the swamp, humping out swamp. They got numerous stories of disappearing people. They've had two women disappear in the Freetown State Forest. One of the women's that she was supposed to be, she got disappeared in a group just who couldn't find her. Found back a week later, she came, I forget where exactly it was, I can't really say, but a week later she came out and she said she was abducted by aliens, and it was a week later. And they tested her, and she wasn't, losing her mind or anything. She just couldn't recall for a week what happened. So a lot of weird stories involved.
See, the thing that I've heard about this is, well, actually, you talked about it already, was that, a lot of Native American wars and, let's face it, all the death and destruction and decay that has occurred there makes for, a nice ghost story.
Sure.
So, one of the stories I liked about the Bridgewater Triangle that I read was about a young girl in the 1940s, and she went on a walk one day through the triangle, and she didn't come back. How many people have actually gone in there never to be seen again?
I'm sure there's been a lot that we don't even know of. There's in part of the Freetown Forest, there's a section called the Ledge, and the Ledge is breathtaking during the day, scary as hell at night. And it's a ledge that stands way above the height of the trees, and you have to drive up this mountain. And at the bottom of the mountain is a reservoir. It's an old hole where they used to dig a lot of rock for the buildings before. So now it's just a pond, a lake, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. One time, a group of people were down there doing an EVP session. And come back after we did the EVP, we moved on to different locations within the Freetown Forest. We played one of the recordings back. And one of the recordings, we had a demonic voice come on. And we never used to get a lot of great EVPs, but we had a really clear one. And one of the EVPs we caught was you hear a demonic voice, and you hear a woman scream, and her voice drifts off like she jumped off the cliff into the water, which would have killed her. And it was just... Mm-hmm. Like, it parallels with, so many people missing, and there's been the same stories that you hear all over. There's a lady in white. There's stories of a lady in white there that was, desperate for her husband, going to meet at the ledge, and he never showed up, and she jumped to her death. So, pretty parallel.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we got a place like that here in Chicago. It's the Rubio Woods Forest Reserve, and there, of course, is Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. A lot of people, even that don't live in this area, know what that is. We have ghosts and monsters and disappearing houses and people walking down the path and never to be seen again. Satanic witches. I mean, it runs the gambit of everything that you find also at the Bridgewater Triangle.
Sure.
So with your other investigations with the group, of course everybody likes to hear, the scariest investigation that you've ever done. Cause let's face it, that's what sells books. But, can you tell us, about some of the investigations that you've done that were just, you almost had a dude run kind of scenario?
I've only had one dude run feeling. I've never ran from anything, but I had one we were doing in old abandoned hospital. And we got the privilege to go down there and do an investigation.
Okay.
And it was downstairs in the basement. We were doing a EVP session, and the group was there. And we always used to, prior to that, we always used to get, when we walk into this place, we'd have a lot of voices and talking in the background. Mm-hmm. And it was only four or five of us in the group. Well, this one time we went down there, and you don't hear it right away, but you can hear it. At the time, we didn't have the playback or the playbacks. But we knew that we had a lot of activity. Well, one of the times we're down there, and we were in the bottom basements of these tunnel access roads and stuff, and I'm standing there with a K2 and a recorder, and we have three or four of us like in a circle, and we're just asking random questions. Well, my hand gets pushed, and I didn't realize it. The hand that had the K2 meter just gets pushed down, and I didn't think of nothing of it until after it happened. I went, holy cow, that's crazy. And not too long after that, we just got a really lot of banging and stomping. So it was one of those cases like, wow, this is getting really, it's like a hotbed here. So it doesn't make me run, but it was pretty, a really interesting you know, investigation at a place that had a lot of history behind it. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I thought Karen was going to ask a question. So, okay, you know, kind of, if you could, you know, I always like to know how different paranormal teams work because I think we can learn from each other, you know, some really important lessons. How does Nightwalkers go about, let's just say you get the call and then you go to the house, and how do you guys do all your setup and, you know, do the investigation?
Well, usually when somebody calls the group, calls Colleen most of the time. She does a lot of that. I do a little bit. Most of the time, she does a little background check prior to it. She'll get the call, do a little background check, get some, you know, who says what they're feeling, what they're seeing, whatever the case. And hopefully we can get some background information on a historical side, maybe dig up some background information that way, and maybe give a little bit more flavor than what just we're getting the call on, so we have a little background. And then when we do an interview, we'll do an interview, do a walk through the house prior to, you know, setting up a date for the investigation, and kind of look around, feel, you know, see what's going on, you know, how many people are experiencing. Is it one? Is it two? Multiple people? Is it, you know, is it demonic? Is it just friendly? Is it this hearing sound? So we kind of like sit back, we kind of sit back a little bit, absorb what's going on, get a little flavor for the house, and decide, okay, I think it's going to go this way. We should use XYZ equipment, or this is what I think we should be bringing, or maybe we focus on this type of room or this type of equipment, and maybe, you know, bring this person in. Or it depends on what you think we need for that particular job. Do we need these? So it's a flavor of how we get there.
Sure.
You know, from interview, prior interview, then the first interview, while we get to the house, and from then we kind of decide where we're going to go.
Yeah. See, now, I love when people use the word demonic. You know, they go into a house or a business or whatever, and it's like, we're dealing with the demon. And now, okay, I've been actively investigating since about 1991, when I was 17, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the very first cases that I ever worked on was definitely something that was not human. Now, I've come across, in the last 20 years, two that I can say with all confidence had never walked this earth in human form, had never breathed air and never seen the sunlight. And that kind of gets thrown around a lot, and I think a lot of it is inaccurate. How do you guys determine that something is demonic in origin? And do you think that that is actual, you know, the whole fallen angel variety, or it's just, you know, some crotchety old guy being a dick?
Who knows, right? When you're on the other side, you might be a dick, probably. But I've never had that experience where it's that bad, or I think this is going to go that direction. We've had one case where they said, "Oh, we think it's demonic," blah blah blah. We went down there, and it was absolutely nothing. We could, you know, justify it and say, "Well, you know, this is definitely going to happen." I personally have never been through anything at that extreme to happen to me or witness or anything else. So I know the stuff that all these books or this, you know, the shows or whatever, they always throw it demonic, and, you know, here comes, you know, XYZ that, you know, to bless the house, and boom, it's gone. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way.
But, I think we all know that.
No, and unfortunately, yeah, under a 30-minute, you know, skip from a show, you know, it's here today, gone tomorrow, it's not that easy, you know? So, but I've never experienced that, and it might. The thing I always like to say, you know, if everyone says, "Well, it's a bad day," then I guess there's nothing here. I says, "Well, if you act like an ass, why would I want to talk to you if I'm dead anyways?" And that's my interpretation, because I've always kind of seen, you know, everyone's going out there sticking things, "Oh, what's your name?" blah blah blah. But it, you know, if the guy's a dick in real life, he's probably a dick when he died. So
there you go.
He was.
There it is. Yeah. Two more times. Yeah. No, but.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, I mean, you constantly run across somebody that's like, "This is my house. I don't want you here. I don't want them here. Get out of my house." And they're going to do – it's kind of like, you know, in Beetlejuice. They tried everything they possibly could to get rid of this family, and it just didn't work. Now, let's say you go into a home where people are dealing with something that's, you know, that's negative in nature, and just, you know, some guy being a jerk, but some dead guy being a jerk. How do you guys get rid of this? Do you sage the home, or
do you
know,
just say, "Sorry, it's a jerky ghost. You're enjoy."
Yeah, have fun.
Yeah, yeah. We usually outsource that to, you know, professionals. We're not professional. We can identify it. We can bless the house, but I prefer to go to someone that's more experienced. And we have a couple of people that we deal with that work hand in hand with if we need it to come right away. So I particularly don't feel comfortable. I know the things to say and the things to do, but I prefer to, give it to someone that's legitimately can get rid of it. Then you just guaranteeing to a homeowner, said, "Oh, I'll take care of it." When I'm not going to say that to a guy when I'm there to help him and identify and what's the cause of the root of the thing, and then go back and say, "Oh, I'll take care of it, no problem." Well, I'd rather have somebody that has better background than I do in demonology and how to cleanse the house and what to deal with, because there's obviously different variables on what people do to clear a house of a problem. And we're just here to identify it, and if we can help you, if we can't, then we're going to point you to people that can in their professional field. So it works for us.
Right. So you mean clergy, priests, rabbis, or do you guys, occasionally, utilize the talents of a psychic medium to do this?
No. We don't use psychic mediums whatsoever.
Okay.
We usually use someone with a cloth. We have a couple of good friends that do a great job for us, and very professional.
Okay.
Well, I've always wondered, though, so what if somebody comes in, like a Catholic priest, comes in to rid a house of an entity, and the entity is Wiccan or Native American or Jewish or...
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends. I mean, it's like... the investigation, getting all the data, capturing it, documenting it. It's a lot of things that build up to, okay, where we're going to go with the end, how are we going to deal with this? So it's the finalization of the investigation, the group getting together, sharing notes, trying to identify what we need to go next. I mean, it's 99% of it, it's nothing that we have to call in, for help. But mm-hmm. there are the 1 or 2% that we need to address, and that's fine, and we do the best we can. Whether it be, and we had some recordings of Wampanoag Indians on in a tribal chant on one of our investigations, and we had no idea. We had to reach out to a Wampanoag to try to figure out what was going on, and he understood the communication, and he helped us with identifying what was going on. And we have to depend on the case study. It depends on who we're dealing with, what we're dealing with. And we'll search out the right proper people for it. So that's pretty much it.
See, I think that's an honest answer without, trying to get rid of something on your own. Because I've actually known many people who will come away thinking that they got rid of something. And it's like, yeah, they got rid of it out of the house, but whatever was there actually followed them home.
Mm-hmm.
It got rid of it for the people. Have you ever had anything follow you home then?
I've never had. One of our members a while back had something following home, and we had to take care of that. But, I mean, I personally never had anything follow me home. Nothing at all.
Hmm.
I'm a big believer in, before you leave a place, making it absolutely clear that you will come visit them, that they're not to come visit you. Because I have been followed. I have been followed home more than once, and so I've learned that I need to set some pretty clear boundaries, because they just like me for some reason. So
you might have an aura that they're open up to. I mean, who knows? I mean, it could be you have a sense to you, and they decide that they can work with you or communicate with you, and maybe they feel more welcome being with you, and they want to follow you. I mean, who?
Yeah. I get a lot of EVPs and stuff too, so that's probably true. Ghosts like me.
I wouldn't doubt it.
and and along those veins, it's like, I think it's also very dangerous for people to ask things. I was watching one of the television shows, one of the more popular ones, and the lead investigator actually invited the spirit of this little boy to come and live in his home because he has children. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, it's like, that is, dude, you've been doing this a long time. You just made a serious rookie mistake, and you're going to lead other people to believe that it's okay to do that. And it's not. You may think you're dealing with some cute little kid, but you're actually dealing with some, monstrous interdimensional being that's going to eat your soul in the middle of the night. Definitely not a good idea.
I kind of look at it like the internet. You think that you're talking to a hot 18-year-old girl, but really it's a hairy truck driver in his undershorts. I think that it can
be the
same
looking for love too. He's looking for love too.
The shows that you watch is, and I think they start off good and they go south sometimes, and I'm not going to say who, I mean, there's so many out there. But the bottom line is, it's a show. It's a show. It sells commercials, and it makes money, and that's the way it is. Right. Like everything else on TV. I mean, it is what it is. I think most of us understand that. But anyone that's going to say, "Okay, follow me home," it's just they lost their mind if they're saying these things. You know what I mean? This is the thing you don't want to keep, and no one wants to bring this home, and especially if there's a family in the house. And something in this is occurring, you want to make sure it's cleansed the right way, or make sure it's blessed the right way. Because you don't want, especially with children involved, we take a high level of security on if there's kids in the house or if this is affecting children. I mean, that's the last thing we want to do. Leave these people and say, "Oh yeah, we just cleanse the house and off we go." Well, I got someone to fight out. He'll be down in X, Y, Z, and not follow up and make sure that, you know, this house is clean and make sure nothing's happened, especially children. I mean, they're the innocents that be affected by it. So,
Well, with that being said, I think we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to throw it over to Cheryl again. We'll pay some bills, and when we come back, we're still talking to Jeff Durrett of Nightwalkers, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the cases that he's done. So stick around. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Hi, it's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK. We will be on Z-Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. We don't sensationalise, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Ztalk 3 till 5 Eastern.
To Ztalk Radio Network.
And we are back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. And still joining us is Jeff Durrett of Nightwalkers. And, you know, Jeff, before we went, while we were on break, you know, we were talking a little bit more about a place, you know, the Bridgewater Triangle and the Freetown State Park. And one thing that's always interested me is, because you were talking about how, you know, it's, you know, heavy-duty Native American Indian ceremonial area, correct?
Correct.
So the thing that always interests me is that, you know, when somebody's like, well, your house is going to be haunted because you're built on an Indian burial ground, and it's like, no, that's not necessarily the case. But from what you told us about this area that you've done a lot of investigations on, that there's a lot going on there. So you want to, you know, care to, you know, go into that with a little bit more detail?
Sure. There's a lot of hot places to go to in the Freetown State Forest. There's a lot of activity. And one of my favorites is the Indian ceremonial ground. And that's mm-hmm. a, uh, it's a Wampanoag owned, and they still have property in there. They still hold their meetings there. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. It's always kept up. They make sure it's always a perfect area. Mm-hmm. So one of the times we did an investigation up there, we went up there. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning in the deep of the wood. I mean, this was a deep.
Right.
We finally get to the area, and we have K2s, EMS detectors, lights, cameras, everything you need to carry into the woods, extra batteries, supplies. Because you know, once you're there, you're not going to go. There's no stores around. You're in the deep of the woods. So yeah. we're doing some sessions, and the K2 meter starts kicking, spiking. We're in the woods. There's no electricity. No nothing. We don't have our cell phones on. We have nothing.
There's no high tension wires or anything like that.
There's nothing in the woods. I mean, this is 22,000 acres. It's astronomical. Look at it. It's huge. There's a lot of history. You can look it up on the websites. But it's huge. There's nothing around. So we're there, and outside the center, it's a huge circle. And in the center of the circle, there's a fire pit. Outside the circle is all these seats made out of wood. Everything's made out of the earth. So everything they made, like covers for the chairs and everything, it's all made out of wood. And I guess all the Indians sit there during the gathering, and they have a chief chair that sits mm-hmm. beyond the circle. Well, we outside the circle, and we're getting a little bit of hiss. We walk inside the circle, and this thing goes out of control. I mean, pegs it to red. It's mm-hmm. holding it. There's nothing around. So we start asking questions, you know, who are you? And it stops and starts jittering and stuff like that. But we did that for about a half an hour, and it's just getting worse. And we're hearing these dogs barking in the background of us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the background, we can hear these dogs, and it's way off to the distance. We're getting farther into this investigation, asking questions, going around. Now the K2's music is hits. Do you want us to be here? Want us to walk out of the circle? If it is, shut it down. The thing shuts down. We go out of the circle. It's fine. We go back in the circle. It goes nuts. I mean, it goes nuts. And we keep hearing this dogs getting louder and louder and louder. And this is at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30, somewhere around there. And now we're like, we can't see nothing. All together at one same time, all the lights, the headlights we had and the flashlights, completely dead.
Yeah.
One of the recorders died instantly. So I said, okay, no big deal. Yeah, something must have happened. I knew we put new batteries in, fresh batteries before we go anywhere.
Sure.
So we have backups. No big deal. We're going to go with backup batteries. So we'll plug in backup batteries. Now, 15 minutes later, it goes completely dead. Well, now we're sitting here. You know, we got probably a recorder going, no lights, no headlamps. We're in the middle of the woods looking at ourselves going, what the hell are we doing now? And now the dog's getting louder and louder. And
you know what?
It almost comforted us.
Yeah, it's really too bad that didn't happen for the Blair Witch movie project, because I really would have loved to have seen their batteries die. But
yeah, really, huh?
So back to these, you know, the battery drains and everything. I mean, were you guys able to catch anything on this investigation that was concrete?
Concrete. After we played the recordings, we had the chanting of Indians. Mm-hmm. Before they just died out, we had chanting of Indians. We had female Indians talking, which was interesting, but we couldn't identify at the time, but we knew it was some sort of Indian chant. We mm-hmm. had to go defer it back to a Wampanoag that we've known for quite some time, and we asked him, and he gave us some background history and what he interpreted it to be, which was kind of interesting. He had background blood in his family, so he mm-hmm. was part of the Wampanoag. So it was pretty interesting. It was just a ceremonial thing that we were catching. It might have been a recurring loop, who knows, but it was kind of weird how all the batteries died and the K2 pinged off to red as soon as we went in the circle. When we came out of the circle, it was fine. It was just a weird thing. And the hounds and dogs were so loud when they come closer. When we went away, it actually dissipated. And it just stopped that. When we got finally back to the main path, there was no dogs anymore. So that was kind of spooky. So that was kind of the weirdest one I went through, yeah.
You know, doing anything, you know, like investigation on Native American ground. My grandmother was Cherokee. Her family was a Longhair clan of the Eastern Band, and you know, it's most Native American people, they're not really forthcoming with their legends. how was it working with elders of a Native American tribe? Were they forthcoming with their legends and the ghostly activity? Were you able to work well with them?
They worked well with us. As long as they knew what we were doing, they were pleased. They were excited to hear that we were interested in their land, because we did a lot of background information about the Wampanoag, the Indians, and we understood it was a lot of trying times for the tribes here, and how much land they lost. And so we kind of had a lot of passion for them, and we felt bad for them. But once they got to know us, we really connected. We had a good thing. They didn't share a lot of ghost or anything like that information with us, but they shared some of their rituals, and they told them these are types of things, the moons and everything else. So we kind of fed off each other, and they respected us. So going further, they were okay with it, and we actually something happened to the land that we were on, we let them know right away so they can fix it or whatever, because they're only here so many times through the course of the year for their rituals and their the tribe meeting. So they work with us, but not so much asking about any spiritual activity or kind of things they get involved in. So we don't want to push it. We were just happy that they gave us rights to go on their land and do what we had to do, as long as we kept it clean and we didn't mess up anything. So they were pretty good.
Now you referenced something earlier with that area, that there are also UFO and creature sightings. Now, we talk about ghosts so much on this that I think sometimes we forget about, that there are other aspects of the paranormal. The paranormal is just an umbrella term. We have, it was cryptozoology and ufology and all that. Now, you talked about a girl that, claimed that she was abducted by little green men. Now, a lot of people will say that certain places are window areas for, paranormal activity. Would you say that this area is one of those places?
I would definitely say that. Yeah, for paranormal, it definitely is a hotbed. There's so much activity there, and so much history that you can document of this area.
Sure,
it's guaranteed. It's almost guaranteed that you're going to experience something. It might be something small, it might be something big, but there's so much activity within. I mean, there's a place inside this Freetown State Forest. In the middle of the forest is a graveyard for animals.
Okay.
I don't know why it's there.
Cemetery, that movie scared the hell out of me.
this would scare the hell out of you, because it's a huge graveyard. It's overgrown. It's not kept up. But there's grave sites that have been dug up by why? Why would they dig up these grave sites for these animals? For the carcasses, for their rituals. That's what they were doing. That's way back in the satanic rituals. They were digging these things up for the crazy stuff they were doing. So, but it's the damnest thing you see. You're shocked at headstones for animals. It's a huge cemetery in the middle of nowhere. So it's got a lot of history, a lot of strange things to see.
So what kind of, creature sightings are we talking about there? Are we talking about Bigfoot, Jersey Devil type stuff, dinosaurs? What kind of stuff are we talking about?
They had the UFOs things. A couple of people seen UFO. There was actually one of the presidents, as he was going back to Boston, he called for a flyby because they said they saw a UFO. I don't know if it was car or I forgot who it was. I'm not big into a lot of UFO. It's interesting stuff, but I don't know the details. But one of the things in this area we have, they call the Pukwudgies, and it's a small creature, sort of 3 foot tall, man/ape look.
Mm-hmm.
It's clawed hands and stuff. But that's what somebody was way back in the day. They were abducted, or not abducted, was attacked by a Pukwudgie. And to this day, it just keeps the stories get more and more and more. But that's pretty much the only thing I know. I'm sure there was Bigfoot sightings and everything, because I know that someone wrote a couple of stories about witnessing a Bigfoot. But I haven't done much investigation, background history involved in it, so I really don't know.
Yeah, my grandmother used to talk about the little people of the mountain, and they very much like what would you call it? The Puck Wedgies, right?
Yeah,
it sounds very much like that. One of the things that has always interested me about your area up there, Massachusetts, Connecticut, or whatever. I don't mean to be offensive, whatever, but you know what I'm saying. that there has always been talk about that it's quite possible that way back, you know, 6, 7, 1,000 years ago or whatever, that people, you know, from Ireland or, you know, Phoenicia or whatever landed there. And now I know that I think it's up in Connecticut or Vermont where you have the Mystery Hill. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done any, you know, kind of investigations at Mystery Hill? Because that's one of those places that's truly fascinating.
I've never done it, and I've seen some stories, and I've talked to a couple of people who've done it. But no, that's a great location. We've never made it up there.
Sure.
But yeah, that's a great location to check out because it does have a lot of background history. It's a mystery. You get up there, and it's like night and day compared to the surrounding areas. It's a good. Yeah, I've never been up there, unfortunately. But, yeah.
So, you know, back to, you know, your ghost investigations. Do you guys do many private homes?
Actually, we do a fair share of them. We've actually done some commercial, some residential. So, I mean, we've done, you know, the norm. We get out there in different areas and, you know, have some stories behind and try to identify and see if there's any, you know, anything behind it. But we've done a lot of commercials and a lot. Yeah, we've had our share of commercials and residentials, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, is there any, you know, the residential ones that you can, you know, speak of? All the groups that I've ever belonged to, we do mostly private residences. You know, is there any that you can, you know, share with us?
We had a good residential house a while back. The family that had the house took a vacation. They gave us the keys to the house. It was great. It was a great investigation. We had stories of in the living room to the stairs of the house going up. People see off the side of the head that an apparition go by.
Mm-hmm.
We got some great EVPs from there. We didn't get anything captioned on a video, but it was one of those places that you felt that there probably is going to be something here. I guess you do this long enough, you walk into a place, you go, oh, this might be something, or I don't get anything from this house just walking in. It's not that I'm sensitive. It's just, I think you do it for so long, you get a pass for it, you get your spidey senses or something like that going, you kind of get right into it. But it was a great house to investigate. It had a lot of history behind it. There's some good EVPs. Didn't get any video or anything. Unfortunately, didn't capture anything on the camera systems, but the K2 was working good, and everyone was pleased with it. So not a lot of crazy stuff, but it was stuff that it made an enjoyable investigation, so.
Sure. Now, you talked a little bit about, you know, when we were on break, some new gear for the paranormal field. I mean, you admittedly, you're a nerd, so, you know, share with the rest of us nerds this new gear that you got coming up.
Hey, speak for yourself, nerds.
Nerds unite.
That's right.
There you go.
So what's this
what I'm working on?
Oh, sorry.
Well, no problem. What I'm working on is a remote RV that can, I want to use ultrasound because, you know, everyone's doing the EMF detectors, the pumps, everything. So I read a couple of articles on ultrasound, and I want to try to use a remote RV.
Hello?
Did we lose him?
I think.
Listen to this, remote RV. That'll actually, if in a 360 radius, that'll identify if there's any motion within ultrasound. And then once it's detected, it'll turn the camera on, take pictures, take infrared pictures, and just keep snapshotting in the field that it identifies through the ultrasound a movement. So that's my next tool.
That's very cool. That's you know, being a guy, of course, you know, we love our toys and whatnot. We have a question for you in the chat room. It's from Rob St. Helen, and he wants to know, with your paranormal team, are you guys more video evidence based or EVP based?
I'm going to say EVP based because if I'm not getting EVPs, I'm probably not going to get anything else. Because most of the time we'll get EVPs. So I prefer to do EVP based. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and I know that Mike Markowitz, that's his name, right? Does a lot. He's really into the EVPs, and he's pretty good at analyzing them and stuff. I know he played several for us when he was on the show, and he gets a lot of EVPs, and he gets some kind of crazy ones with like lots and lots of stuff going on in them.
Yes, he has a different. Most people are asking questions. We like to ask questions, but Mark hasn't. He doesn't ask questions. He just lets him roll, and that's a different kind of a way of coming about it. And it actually works good for him. He does a super job. He's a great guy. I've known him for a little while, and I can't stress he does a super job. He knows the equipment. He knows what he's looking for. He knows, you know, the bandwidth of sound. And he's done a lot of background work to make it work for him. So he just does a different thing. He just lets him roll, and he gets some great stuff.
I love it. You guys are a ridiculously nerdy group. Everybody has their own little kind of corner of what you do, and it really, you all complement each other so well, don't you?
I think we do. I think we're an older group, and we know what we want to do, and we get along great. There's no conflicts. There's no drama. We get together. We have a great time. We always make it a day. We'll go out to dinner before or after, and we'll talk and discuss. And we'll share ideas, and everyone has their own only thing they're great at, and then put them all together, we get a super group. I can't stress that at all. We have a great group. Yeah.
Well, and what's really nice to see is that you see a lot of groups, and a lot of times they're younger groups that are sort of working at cross purposes, and there's a lot of ego involved. It sounds like you guys have a level of maturity, at least, where you set aside any ego involvement for the greater good of the group, and that's really awesome.
Definitely, yeah. The ego stands outside the dog. There's nobody has an ego in this group. And it's unfortunate because you do see that in new groups. You know, there's always the one guy that wants to be the head talent show and, you know, dictating other people. And it doesn't work like that. You got to be a unit. You know, every puzzle has a piece, and to make the whole puzzle complete, everyone has to work as a unit. And that's how we are. I mean, everyone I like to work with in our group. I mean, a great bunch of people. I mean, I can't stress that enough. We're happy. We're very happy at what we do, and we enjoy. We feed off each other, so it's pretty cool. Yeah.
So if you could find another person to add to your group, what would the ideal skill set do you think that would be able to fill in any gaps that you guys have missing?
I would say someone that has more science background. I'm a guru with cameras and equipment and stuff like that, but I would like to see more of a scientific, someone with a background in science a little better. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be a flavor or an offset that we can always go and say, okay, what do you think? What could this possibly, whether it be science, theories or whatever, or chemistry or anything that maybe could enhance our ability to identify anything like that. I've always enjoyed the sciences. And I've always wanted someone in the background field to come with the group and has more of a 60% background in science. That way, we can feed off him too, and maybe get better evidence or better theories.
Why don't you guys put like an advertisement at MIT?
There you go.
You know what I'm saying?
I probably, if he was coming from MIT, I don't think I could afford him.
Yeah, really.
Well, I wish
I could have went to MIT.
I'm really interested in the dynamics of groups because I know a lot of groups and I work with a lot of different groups. And, of course, I have a group of my own. But it's really interesting to see how the dynamics of different groups sort of weave together and the skill sets that people bring and how that makes a complete team. To me, that's just fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And it starts with a friendship. I mean, you gotta like the people you're with for one. And that's a critical thing because if no one's getting along or only a few, then you get outcasts feeling like they're not part of the group. And I think everyone works exceptionally well. It really is a great group. Colin did an excellent job on setting this group up, and she's a great, she founded it. It's a great thing we have here. The whole team feeds off each other, and that's a positive thing.
Yep, definitely. And so, do you have a lot of, or do you guys participate in kind of the larger paranormal community in your area as a whole, or are you fairly insular?
The big picture, but we do work with other groups, or we'll blend from we'll carry. Do you have an extra group, or what can we do? You know, they'll come on with us, or a couple people come on with us. We'll ask for the expertise, or if they have some equipment that, you know, maybe we can swap equipment or share ideas. We got a bigger case where we'd like to expand, and, you know, we have our own camera systems and, you know, our own equipment. But if it's a bigger location, then we'll, you know, reach out to some of the groups we like that share our passion. You know, they're more core towards, you know, maturity core, and we try to stay away from the younger groups. So
you're trying to say is you try to stay away from the drama. I believe that's what I hear in the subject.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, drama is the last thing I want to hear. When I, you know, I do this because I have a passion for it, and I really like to do it. But I don't want to hear about drama because I've been down that path, and you know that's not the. I mean, any group that has drama, I don't even want to participate in it.
And yeah, you know what? 20 years from now, when paranormal fad has faded, you're going to be the guy that's still out there chipping away at it and investigating.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because the phase is going to be the phase will be out of everybody because you know when the first ghost hunting show came out, everyone was awed by. Then they start these groups and it goes on and on and on. But I've been doing this way before all these ghost shows came out. I'm not going to say particular ones, but I've been doing it long before they have. And it's a passion and it's something I like to do and it's fun. It's not that I revolve my life around, but it's a great hobby. Yeah. And I have a great, I've got a life and I've got other things in my life, but this is a great thing I like to do. It's exciting, yeah.
So if you could make a paranormal television show, what would be on your show?
What would be on my show?
Everybody's got an idea of how they would do it, so I'm curious as to what yours would be.
I never saw that, so now, you caught me off guard on that one.
Sorry.
No problem. I'm not. I would not want to do a paranormal show. Actually, I don't think I would want to do one because it's not what I'm doing it for. I don't want to be on TV. I don't want to. I don't need to be in the limelight. I like to do what I do. We have a good, good people in the group, and I just enjoy doing that. It wouldn't faze me to. TV's not for me.
That's an honest answer, man.
That's a good answer, and I'm the same way. There's no way I would want to do a paranormal show, period. So if you could expand into another area of the paranormal, do you have, like, Rick's heart is with the ghosts, but he really kind of likes Bigfoot an awful lot, too.
And yeah, I do.
my heart is with the ghosts, but I'm really kind of
I'm a crypto nerd, man.
Yeah, I kind of like the UFOs a little bit. So what's your second? If you weren't doing the ghosts, what would you be researching?
I would probably be researching murder locations. For some reason, I'm more in the calm. I've always started off in the horror aspect of it in my life from as an early age. So I'm always interested in the criminal minds of people, what they do, how they lose it, these mass murders or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm always intrigued with those things too. So I think I would rather delve into that type of field than anything. And I'm just amazed what sinks in a person's mind to snap or.
Yeah, me too. When I was in high school, when we were senior, part of our project was we had to write this really long research paper, like 30 pages or something. And I did mine on the Charles Manson murders.
that was a great murder. I mean, that was a great story. A lot of books were wrote by it.
I know. So do you have any particular murder or murderer that really fascinates you then, or just is it kind of all of them?
Well, it's kind of all of them, but seeing I grew up in Florida, I was raised in Florida, I was always, as a child, into my teens, and I'm still enjoy reading some, new and stressful whoever writes it. I'm always involved in the Lizzie Borden thing. I was passionate for that thing, because I grew up in that town. We grew up with that, the stories and the songs and everything else. So I always draw back to, the Lizzie Borden murders and stuff like that.
Do you think she did it?
Oh, no doubt about it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually did an investigation up there and caught some crazy EVPs and identified that, the people that were doing the tours are full of shit. It was crazy. It was just, they were mocking the people that are doing the tours on the they give you a tour along the house, and we were walking with the tour guide, a little old lady that had a lot of passion for her job, and that was, I thought that was really nice, but she was biased when she was saying things. And it's fine. I understand. So to make your money, and you know, we're there to see the house and pay your parents to see the house. But when you go back and we played the recordings, we had these males mocking her. It was the way they were talking, from way back in the day. So it was kind of interesting how they were denouncing what she was saying. And they were telling us like the truth. So it was like kind of crazy. Like, yeah, she's telling one side, but you know, these people are telling us other side on the other side. So it's kind of funny, but.
Wow.
It was interesting. Yeah.
The Lizzie Borden house is actually one of the ones I'd be interested in. What was one? Hey, Cheryl, turn on your mic for a sec. What's the one that Chad did?
Villisca?
Villisca Axe Murderer House. That's right. That was a different axe murderer.
There's so many.
As if they're not all the same.
Yeah, the axe, you go crazy.
I know. We don't allow axes in our house just in case somebody snaps. No, I'm kidding. So
for your house.
That's right. So are you as interested in like the serial killers, or are you more interested in the killers that just snap?
Serial killers. Mm-hmm. I'm just fascinated how someone will it be. They're all the same. They just mass murder, and how people follow them. That's the biggest thing. How people come to the conclusion of taking their own lives or suicide. I mean, it doesn't have to be a mass murder. He actually does the commit crime, but how does people fall so low in life where they follow this guy to the death? It just blows my mind.
Yeah, you know, like the Hale-Bopp comet. What was the name of that group?
Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate. Crime cases. There's a group of young individuals, smart intellectuals, and one at a time they kill themselves, and the next guy would fix them up just right. And it's just amazing how they set off. It's just fascinates me beyond belief how people can be controlled by one individual or a group or a founder or whatever. How low they can go, how they feel so bad where they can follow this guy to their death. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, clearly
I'm so curious in that.
Yeah, I clearly have a similar curiosity because I've I'm a big reader of like true crime and stuff too, just because it's so interesting. We have a place out here. Have you ever heard of Ruth Hazard and the Starvation Heights murders?
No, I didn't hear that one. No.
Oh, you need to do a little research on this. Her name is Ruth Hazard. Yeah, the author's name is Greg Olson. Greg with two G's, G-R-E-G-G Olson, and it's called Starvation Heights. And this gal was a doctor here in Washington State. I live in Washington State, across the water from Seattle. In a place called Olalla, and she built this sanatorium, and she had people take what she called her starvation cure, and essentially she starved these people to death and stole all their money.
Wow.
And she was a mass murderer, and so some local groups have investigated the house where the sanatorium was, and it's got some pretty interesting activity there. But wow. That aside, if you're fascinated by those mass murderers, look up Ruth Hazard because she's something else.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. So, what do you guys have? Do you guys have anything coming up? Are you going to be at any conferences or anything?
Nothing here. We've sort of shut down for the holidays because everyone's doing so many things. Some people are traveling, some people are not. Some people have to go, you know, see their relatives. So we kind of like don't do anything. I mean, we've got things that we're shooting for, but right now, and most of the stuff is just, it's a holiday season. It's just hard to get everybody together. Everyone's in the new year. So we're planning on doing something in March. So.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So if people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
I'm all over the place. I have a Facebook for my, for the Devil's Door, for my business. We also have a group, Nightwalkers, on the web. It's all over the place. I mean, it's a great website for Nightwalkers. So we're all on there. The whole group's there. You know, a lot of background history information, some of the stuff we've done, some pictures and some background history. For the Devil's Door, I've got a website for that, so, and, Yeah, that's mostly we can find most of us. We all have our Facebook accounts, and we've got the group on there on the website. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great talking to you, Jeff.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, come back again.
Sure.
All right, so we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Cheryl and I are going to do our usual talk about, because, you know, the show that I keep accidentally watching, American Horror Story, had its season finale last night, so Cheryl and I are going to gab about that when we come back. So, Jeff Durrett, thank you very much. We'll be right back, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Why the words you say?
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for RAD. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ZTalkRadio.com.
And welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. This is Karen and Rick. Sorry about that. Had to take care of a little bit of a...
he had to there. Drop the kids off at the pool.
Thanks, Karen. Now everybody knows.
Well, your kids swim.
So, everybody's been listening. We've been talking to Jeff Durrett of Nightwalkers. And, you know, we always like having the people from Nightwalkers on. They're always very interesting, very open-minded, very professional. And I like the fact that they're not all about drama and wanting to be on television.
I agree. What a great thing that is, huh? Yeah. So, Cheryl and I were going to just talk real briefly about American Horror Story only because we said we were going to. And then I think we're driving this show off the rails a little early tonight because I'm losing my voice.
And I got to go to work.
And Cheryl's got a Christmas shop. So
Christmas shop.
It's not that we don't love you, our listening audience.
Slacker.
I have two presents left.
If I talk much longer, I'm not going to be able to speak at all. And like I say, well, the men in the house will give a big cheer.
Yay.
Yeah, really.
Mom's going to shut the hell up.
So last night was the season finale of American Horror Story, the show that I have accidentally watched for about the last 4 weeks, swearing that I was never going to watch it again. And every week I accidentally watch it again. So, Cheryl, you were disappointed. Spoiler alert! Wait.
Okay. Major spoiler alert. I was not disappointed. I was frustrated.
Because they killed off the whole family. Everybody. Everybody in the main cast, except for Jessica Lange.
Yeah. Dead. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's frustrating because now I feel like, well, I'm assuming the characters are going to come back, the main characters. But now I feel like they're going to be very limited in these...
Well, they can't freaking go to Disneyland or something.
They can't leave the house except on Halloween. I'm just a little sad and disappointed because I don't know where it's going to go from here. Except for Demon Child.
They can only leave the house during Halloween?
Because they're dead. Yeah. They're ghosts.
The house has this power, sort of, over the dead that die there on the property.
Okay, all right.
And they cannot leave. But fair now, enough. In a way, it was kind of happy because now the family's all together.
But the way that it ended today was awesome. I watched it this morning, not last night, because they ended with a psycho 3-year-old kid who murdered his nanny, and that's just freaking cool.
Oh, come on. They totally stole that from Halloween, Michael Myers, when he cut the throat of his babysitter.
Oh, I don't remember that from Halloween.
I don't know. I haven't ever seen a Halloween movie. I know you're shocked.
Not really.
Everyone, expressions of shock. Karen hasn't seen a movie.
Oh, my goodness.
No. Wow.
That's all right. I've never seen American Ghost or whatever it's called.
American Horror Story. Here's what I will tell you about it is that Chad just said I watched them all and like hated every minute of it. I was kind of the same way. I was intrigued by the premise. I tuned into the first couple shows. I was like, all right, well, this kind of has me wondering where it's going. And by the end, I was just like, oh, God.
Okay, here's the thing. Chad has a very short-term memory because several times during this show, mainly towards the beginning, few episodes, he would turn to me and say, this is a great show. So when he says what he just said in the chat room, I think he has selective memory because he really liked the show at first. And then...
Well, so, but, you know, what do you like in a good, what kind of a show, what movie or show have you watched that's scared the hell out of you? I gave you mine, which was Hitting the Pendulum, Vincent Price. I like more of the psychologically scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I find that as a paranormal investigator, ghost stories don't scare me.
No.
Well, what about, like, The Exorcist? The movie?
I find that freaking hilarious.
It didn't really scare me, no.
Not even the first time you saw it.
I actually kind of found it funny, too, because the first time I watched it with my college roommate. Her name was Kristen. And for weeks after, all I would have to do is go, Kristen, and she'd freak out. So it's great.
Well, that one scared me. That movie did scare me. It kind of still scares me, even now. But movies like The Ring, which are kind of psychological, scare me. So not really the slasher horror movies. It's more like the psychological.
I don't like slasher movies either. Yeah. Rick, what scares you? Anything?
you know what? You know what really scares me is losing my family. That is something that would actually keep me up at night. But scary movies and all that, you know, nah, it's all been done before.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob says that all paranormal movies are boring, and he's kind of right. I had high hopes for Paranormal Activity because everybody said, oh, this is a really scary movie. And it just wasn't. And then same with Blair Witch. I thought Blair Witch, I'd just be on the edge of my seat, and I wasn't.
Yeah, so. I remember when I saw that in the movie theater. There was a guy sitting there with his girlfriend at the end. He yells out, he's like, I totally blame you for this. What the F was this ass?
Oh my God. Okay.
It was pretty hilarious. And he says it so loud, and everybody's like, yeah, this movie sucked ass. You know, it's, God, it was terrible.
Okay, Chad
so Cheryl,
did remind
zombie
me.
Zombie movies scare you?
In chat, he just typed zombies, Cheryl? Question mark. They do scare me in a way because I don't know. One of these days, you guys, it's gonna happen.
Well, you know what? We should ask Robin Marie about that if she can give a prediction for 2012. Yeah. Will there be a zombie outbreak in the state of Wisconsin?
Okay, wait. WOOPI in the chat room has the best scary movie ever, which is
the Muppet movies.
The Muppet movies.
That would be Elaine. Yes, that is frightening. I absolutely agree. Kermit the Frog. It's, I don't know, the scariest. So scariest Muppet character. I'm gonna go with Beaker.
That's a good choice.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Ralph the dog. Yeah, he's probably like a secret pedophile or something.
Or who's the one that waka waka waka?
That's Fozzie the Bear.
Fozzie Bear.
Who's the big the giant Muppet that's all red? Or is he blue? And he's kind of... Monster. No, wait. Is that Monster?
Animal.
Animal. That's it. Yeah. Animal's a little scary.
No, I love Animal. Hey, you know, this is totally apropos of nothing other than that we're talking about Muppets. So, do you know that Cookie Monster only eats cookies as a sometime treat now, and he's mostly a vegetable monster?
Oh, he's a veggie monster now.
Is,
yeah, I saw that.
That is just wrong. Are you kidding me?
I wish I was.
Oh.
Well, you know, we do have a problem with childhood obesity and diabetes in this country, so we're going to change, like, a lovable icon.
So it's probably now, like, Oscar the kind of grumpy sometimes. Oscar who sometimes wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. Or
Oscar gets a lot of fiber.
I mean, I'm sorry, that's just wrong. That's just too politically correct.
I know, somebody told me that, and I was just horrified because Cookie Monster is Cookie Monster.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so big Christmas plans. Cheryl has to go Christmas shopping.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Visiting with the family.
Yeah. Next, big Christmas plans.
Yep. Christmas Eve, my family. Christmas morning, Jamie, so that should be fun.
You see, now Christmas morning sounds great, and you sort of sound a little heavy on Christmas Eve.
Oh, any time with my family is so much fun.
I know, and we've already celebrated our family Christmas because Jim's working over Christmas.
Aww.
So. Oh, that's too bad.
So, no, you know what? Christmas is, I don't think that it matters what day you celebrate Christmas, except that, you know, there's nothing to do. There was nothing on TV on Christmas Day except for like 24 hours of A Christmas Story, and I can only watch that once. So
In my life, I could only watch that once.
once a year.
You gotta watch it once a year.
Okay, so me losing voice, Rick has to go to work, Cheryl has to go shopping. What do you guys say we wrap a little earlier?
Yep.
Let's put this baby to bed.
Okay, so next week, Cheryl?
Next week we have a returning guest who's been with us at least twice, maybe three times. Jeff Grunow from TGAF, the great... Rick, what is it? The Great American Phenomena Hunt?
I have never heard of him. Never heard of him.
I just like asked this random person on Facebook if they want to come on the show. You know?
I do that a lot too. I just post and say, "Hey, anybody want to come on our show?" And every once in a while, somebody says, "Well, I guess."
Sure, why not, Rick? What's the announcement though? He's got an announcement next week. He's gonna.
He's keeping it very, very quiet. I mean, he's only given me like little nuggets. That's probably apropos to what's happening earlier. But he's only given me like little nuggets. Kind of asked me not to really say anything. But he's got. They got a lot of. They got a lot of really good projects coming, and they're going to be working with some new equipment, and it's of the human variety. So it should be a good show. He has a lot to tell us. And, you know, TGAF is always fun to have on. I like those guys. They're always a lot of, you know, they're a good time.
Cool.
They definitely are. Okay, so next week we'll be talking with the sheriff. Until then, you guys
The marshal.
The marshal. Oh my god, I better not call the sheriff.
Howdy, marshal.
Close.
Hey, I am hopped up on cough medicine, okay?
All right, you're forgiven.
I had to take cough medicine so I could continue to speak.
Yeah, you're a druggie, Cheryl's a slacker, and I'm off to work.
Nice. He's off nice
to,
combo.
He's not. He's off to finish. He's off to take more kids to the pool.
On that note, happy holidays, everyone.
Yep. Yeah, everybody, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, and I'm sure that there are others that were happy solstice.
Hold on a second. You got to say it like this. Happy Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
There you go.
That's pretty good.
Covers the big three.
Everybody have a good holiday. We'll be back next week. Next time, until next time, Z Talk Radio, Paranormal Underground Radio. I need to go take some more cough medicine because clearly my mind's given out on me. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z Talk Radio Network.